Welcome to the best podcast in the history of mankind. It's Monty's Rockcast. And now, here's your host, Monty Coleman.
Hey, 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 it's Monty. Welcome to the Rockcast. So glad you could join me for episode 294. And yes, that's right, I said 294 episodes. And that's what happens when you do 1 to 2 episodes per month for about 17 or 18 years. They start to add up. And I had somebody ask me the other day if there's anywhere they can find the old episodes from like 2009, 2010. And I said, you know, no. I took all those down years ago and hopefully they will never resurface. And the reason for that is they were so bad. And I've kind of always been that way about anything that I do. When I first start learning, I totally suck. It didn't matter if it was learning how to play guitar or writing songs. It took me years of working at it and trial and error before I finally figured it out. And so those early episodes, I'm going to say 1 through 150, were just awful. But I got to say, a lot of you guys out there stuck with me through all of it. And you're still here, and I really appreciate you.
But you're still bad.
Now, the thing that really amazes me when I look back on my podcast career is that I was able to come up with stuff to talk about over the course of all those years. Like every single month, I gotta fill up 50 minutes to an hour with something that's interesting, or at least hopefully interesting. And that's where you guys have come through with so much excellent podcast fodder. You give me your thoughts, ideas, and your questions. Much like the one I got from my good friend Doug Van Pelt, who is the owner and editor of Heaven's Metal magazine. And Doug was kind enough to put Galactic Cowboys on the cover of the latest issue, which is the 40th anniversary edition. But I'll get to that in a minute, but right now, getting to Doug's question, he says, "Hey Monty, how's it going?"
What a great question.
Well, thanks for asking, Doug. You know, I've been staying very busy. I'm still enjoying Houston despite the brutal heat and doing what I can to make a little extra money because, you know, we do have an extra mouth to feed. Because, yeah, you know, I told you on the last episode that Alex and I were out walking one morning and we came upon this stray pit bull. And she looked like she hadn't eaten in a while and you could see her ribs and she was filthy dirty. And she didn't have a collar or a chip, so we just took her home and adopted her. And of course, I always thought of pit bulls as kind of scary, but she was just so sweet and she had this look on her face like, please help me. Well, we've had her now for a month or so, and I figured out finally that she's got that look on her face all the time. Even though we've just spoiled the crap out of her, she just still looks at us like, would you please help me? Please pat my little head. And so I do. I have to. And for the most part, she's just a great dog. She never barks. She house trains, so she never pees or poops in the house. And overall, she's just a sweetheart. However, we did discover one day when we left for a few hours that she likes to chew. Because when we got back, she had destroyed her little bed. And so we were pretty afraid that she might try and chew up our couch. And so one night when we had to go out, we left her in a utility room. And we put her food and water in there. And Alex also left her a whole box full of chew toys. And when we got home, she was fine. But we saw that all those chew toys were scattered all over the floor. And they looked like they hadn't been touched. However, she completely destroyed the box that they were in. I mean, just shredded it. So I'm not real sure what we're going to do about that. But right now, she can't really be left alone too much and be trusted. But like I said, there's times when we have to leave, like the other night when Alex and I had tickets to go see Flyleaf. And this wasn't just a concert that I wanted to see, it was a concert that I had to see. Because I've been a fan for the last 20 years and I'd never got to see them. And so when tickets went on sale back, I think it was in January, I told Alex, we've got to go and I will pay for the tickets even though we can't afford it. And so I found this ticket app that would let me pay it out in $16 installments. And when I signed up, I thought, you know, $16. That's how much I used to pay back in the 80s for two tickets. But now going to a concert is like you're paying off a washing machine. But it's Flyleaf, so I had to do it. And if you don't know who Flyleaf is, well, they're kind of a Christian band. Their lead singer is Lacey Sturm. And they haven't gotten a ton of airplay over the years, but you might remember this song. So I'd been looking forward to this show for months, and it was at the Bayou Music Hall in downtown Houston. And we tried to get there before the doors opened, but when we got there, the line was literally wrapped all the way around the building. And we knew the show had sold out, but this place held about 3,000 people. But I swear there was more than that, and it just was completely packed. And it looked to me like they had oversold it. And we kind of got stuck over to the side, and I could kind of see over the top of everyone, but Alex is only 5'3", and she couldn't see anything. And we stood there through three pretty mediocre opening bands, and by the time Flyleaf came on, you couldn't even move in that place. But still, I couldn't wait for Flyleaf. They finally come out, and the sound was just horrid. Like, I had to stick my fingers in my ears just to figure out what song they were playing. And they were on stage for an hour and a half, maybe, and didn't do an encore, which I was fine with. But by the time I walked out of there, I thought, you know, that is maybe the most disappointing show I've ever been to. But here's the thing, I'm not blaming Flyleaf. They put a lot of energy into it, and you know, they were trying, but that venue sucked. It was too crowded, and the sound was just awful. So that's my unfortunate concert review. Wish I could have had something better to say. But I still love Flyleaf. I've still got their albums, so there's that. And I can now cross them off my list of bands to see.
This is just a bummer.
Alright, you know, I think I'll get back to Doug Van Pelt later, because I got another question from Sabrina Nelson on Facebook, and she asked me, did you ever like ZZ Top? Well, thanks for the question, Sabrina, and the answer is absolutely. I started liking them when I was in high school, but when I was in college in the 80s, they came to the arena there in Springfield, Missouri. And I thought, okay, well, this might be cool. And so I bought a couple of tickets. I think they were probably $8 a piece. And my plan was to find some girl to ask on a date. But of course, I was shy, and that never happened. So I ended up taking a buddy of mine. And this was when ZZ Top was on the Deguelo tour. I think that album had Cheap Sunglasses on it. And I think it was one of the first tours they ever did where they had the really long beards. And they came out and they looked so cool. But then they started playing and they absolutely blew my mind. Especially Billy, he had the sunburst Les Paul and he was just the baddest man on earth. And to this day, it's just one of the best shows I've ever seen. And I went to see him again in Kansas City on the next tour. I think it was like El Loco or something like that, but that was good. Not as good as the Deguelo tour, but still had a really good time. But then as time went on, when they started doing legs and the videos with the girls in the car and all that, I kind of started losing a little interest. But around 85, I got in this cover band and I was the guitar player. And I also sang vocals on stuff like Sharp Dressed Man. And so I go back a long way with ZZ Top. I've done a couple of paintings of Billy Gibbons. Actually got to say hi to him one time in a club in Houston. And so yes, I'm a big fan still. And I was sad to hear that Frank Beard died the other day. But strangely enough, in a weird twist to this topic, the last couple of months have been pretty bad for me and Alex financially. My little art business where I sell paintings and prints to people just kind of dried up. And so I finally said, you know, I'm going to have to do a couple of side jobs. And I talked to this friend of mine who I thought might know of somebody that needed help. And he said, well, I know this guy that has a ZZ Top tribute band. And they could use a bass tech / roadie for a couple of gigs. And they'll pay you $200 a show. And I said, I am there. I know how to tune a bass and I know how to carry amps and equipment. And so I was able to make my car payment in August and it was actually kind of fun. They were nice guys and man, they go all out. They've got all the clothes down to a T, they've got the beards, they've got the fuzzy guitars. And during the show, I just sat there by the side of the stage and heard some of my favorite ZZ Top songs. So being a ZZ Top tribute band roadie wasn't so bad, but I knew that alone wasn't really going to cut it because they were only going to play about, you know, once a month. So Alex got the idea, let's try doing some DoorDash. And so what we did is she would take the orders and navigate and I would drive. The problem with that is that we would drive around in hellacious Houston traffic for 2 or 3 hours. And we'd only make about $25 sometimes, which was just enough to put that $25 back into our gas tank. And so that just wasn't working out at all. And so at that point I thought, well, I've just got to figure out something else. And at this point in the show, this is where I've got to share the harsh reality of being a musician or artist in the year 2026. So gather the kids and family around your computer because Uncle Monty's about to give you a history lesson. And for me, it all began back in the 70s when I had dreams of being a rock star. And by the late 80s, some of those dreams came true because I was fortunate enough to get signed to one of the biggest labels in the world. And they gave us hundreds of thousands of dollars to tour and make records. And after that record company decided we weren't cool anymore, we got signed to another label. And so through most of the 90s, that's pretty much all I did. I was a professional musician. But then came the 2000s, and a few nerds decided that no one needed to pay for music anymore. It should all just be free. And that's when the record companies started going away, as did the record deals. Now, Galactic Cowboys were fortunate enough to get signed to a small label, and we did put out a record in 2017, but we never really saw much money from that. We were just able to make an album. And that would bring us to today, where we've got a new album, thanks to our fans, but none of us are rich, especially me. And even though I've made all those albums over the years, I don't really have much to show for it. But I still have my art, and for the last 5 or 6 years, you know, I would sell a painting or, get a commission every couple weeks, and I was making a go of it. But like I said, recently, all those sales just kind of disappeared. And so I knew I had to do something. And so once again, I talked to this friend of mine. And he said, listen, I've got this company that is a cleaning service. And we go into crime scenes and houses that have been torn apart and we fix them. And I said, wow, that sounds horrible. I'll do it. And so he ended up hiring me and Alex both part-time. And he gave us the address. We drove about an hour, and when we got there, it was this gigantic mansion in this gated community. And as we were driving through this ritzy neighborhood, I told Alex, you know, I was only one hit song away from being able to live somewhere like this. But as it is, let's go work. And so we walk in this place, and they've got these gigantic glass window doors. And I'm going to say they were about 30 or 40 feet tall. And they lead out to this amazing swimming pool with a waterfall. And I'm thinking, you know, I really don't need anything like that, but it sure would be cool. But that's when I look about 25 yards beyond the pool. And I see that there's a golf course that comes up right to the edge of their backyard. And it's about 100 degrees in the shade at this point, and I see some golfers out there golfing. And I look at them and I think, you know, I know you're rich, and I don't hate you for that, but what the hell are you doing out there in this weather playing golf?
They're having fun.
But anyway, Alex and I were able to pay our bills in August, and we were thankful for that. And when we got home at night, we would turn our attention to Galactic Cowboys, which is much more fun, even though there's a lot to do right now. And one of those things that we were doing was sending out digital download codes to all the people who had funded our Kickstarter campaign. Yes, that's right. It's finally happening. The album that we started making about 2 years ago is finally done. We have the CDs, we have the vinyl, but before we started sending those things out, we thought we'd go ahead and send out digital downloads so people could go ahead and have the album, or at least hear it. And so a lot of you have heard it by now, and from the reactions I'm getting, people just seem to love it. I've had people tell me that they love it from start to finish, that it's one of the best albums we've ever done, if not the best. I've had people tell me they love how heavy it is, and yet at the same time, they love the humor and all those Galactic Cowboy things, and we're just really pleased at the positive reactions. And really, it's been overwhelmingly positive, except for like one or two people. One guy wrote and said, I don't like the right-wing politics. I can't listen to this. And I thought, right-wing politics? What do you mean you don't like common sense? Because I don't even really think we were trying to be political. We were just trying to make statements about how insane the world is right now. But whatever, if you don't like common sense or the truth, then you can listen to Rage Against the Machine. I don't care. We just try to make really good songs.
I hate that.
But anyway, yes, we sent out digital downloads to all the people who had funded the album. We thought it would only be fair for them to hear it first because they're the people who put up their money 2 years ago. And we had about 600 people that we had to either email or send a text to with these codes. And Alex jumped in and did the majority of the work on this. And she just spent days sending out these digital codes. And I know a lot of people probably thought it was somebody from the band doing it, but no, it was her. I sent some out, but she did the majority of it. And so a big thank you to Alex.
She's just great.
Of course, nothing we ever do in Galactic Cowboys is without problems. And we started finding out that when people were downloading the album, the first song in the album was not on there. And so I'd end up having to email them the song myself. The other problem was that when people on Facebook started finding out that codes were being sent out, they were wondering, hey, well, when can I get the album? And I'd have people saying, hey, where can I buy it? And I'd have to explain, the album is not available yet to the general public. But once we get all the funders taken care of, then we'll throw it out there for everyone. and you'll be able to buy CDs and vinyl and t-shirts. And if you're one of those people that just wants to buy a digital download, well, hopefully that'll be available soon.
I want it. Even if it's wrong, I want it.
All right, I said I was going to talk more about Doug Van Pelt and Heaven's Metal magazine, and so let's talk about that now. And as I told you, Doug has put us on the cover of his 41st anniversary issue. And he has personally told me that that will be available on September 8th. And what I would do if I were you is just Google Heaven's Metal magazine or HM Press. And I think it's only $5 and you get a big story on Galactic Cowboys. There's a big photo of one of my new paintings of the band. There's photos of us in the studio. There's a great article on us. I think there's an interview with me. And Anthony Castellito did an amazing review of our new album. And I won't ruin the whole thing, but he basically says at the end of the review that this album is his pick for album of the year. And so What Planet Are You From is off to a great start. And so look for that in September. It's Heaven's Metal magazine. And if you don't happen to know, Heaven's Metal is a publication that focuses mainly on Christian rock and Christian metal. And we've never specifically called ourselves a Christian band. We've just always kind of put our music and our albums out there for anyone to listen to. And we never used Christianity as a marketing tool. But at the same time, we've had songs where we talk about God and spiritual things. And we've always been open to playing Christian festivals or, doing interviews with Christian podcasts. We do that all the time. And so I was really proud that Doug chose to put us on the cover. And so a couple of weeks ago, I made a post on Facebook. And I just said, we made the cover of HM and thank you, Doug Van Pelt. And then the comments started coming in and most of them were awesome. Can't wait for this. Very cool. But then this one guy posted a comment that said, let's face it, they're not a Christian band.
Oh my goodness. Oh wow.
And I thought, what exactly does that mean? And what is the definition of Christian band? And of course, I've been dealing with this topic for a long, long time, even going back to when I first started playing. And I had a couple of relatives who would say, Monty, do you play good music? And I'd tell them, well, yeah, I think it's good. But I knew what they were asking me. They were trying to say, is this safe for Christians to listen to? And I suppose my answer would have been yes, because the songs I was writing didn't have a lot of sexual innuendo, and you didn't have to worry about a lot of cursing. But at the same time, I never wanted to write anything that just sounded safe. I always wanted to write something that would cause people to react, whether it gave you goosebumps or made you want to bang your head. And I know when my dad, who was a preacher, bought me my first guitar, he had in mind that I would play Christian music. But I was like, no, Dad, I want to be Ted Nugent. And I went in my bedroom and stayed there for years learning how to play Ted Nugent and playing along with UFO and anything else that was on the radio. And all along the way, I would have Christian people and preachers tell me that that stuff's of the devil. And they made me feel really guilty. And at one point I said, okay, enough. I'm not going to listen to any more rock and roll. And that lasted about 2 weeks. Because one night this radio station said, tonight at midnight we're playing the new Foreigner album. And I said, okay, I'm going to stay up and tape it. And from that point on, I just went crazy. And it's not like you think. I never drank, I never did drugs or anything. But I did buy albums. And I went to concerts. And when I went to see Judas Priest or Blue Oyster Cult, there were Christian people outside of the arena telling me, don't go in there, it's of the devil. But I'd still go in and have a good time, and then I'd go home and I'd practice my guitar and I'd write songs. And eventually I got into a cover band, like I said earlier. And the other guys in the band were Christians, just like I was, but we traveled around in a van and we played bars. And honestly, it was great experience for me as a musician. I learned how to perform, and I got really comfortable playing in front of people. But I eventually got tired of that because I got bored playing cover tunes in front of a bunch of drunks. And so I quit. And I didn't really know if I'd ever play in a band again, because I'd just gotten married for the first time, and I thought, well, maybe that's it. But apparently God had other plans for me. Because less than a year later, I got a call from a Christian artist in Houston, Texas. And he needed a bass player, and so I went and bought a bass, and I went down and tried out, and I got the job. And we moved to Houston, and there I was, touring with a Christian rock band. And it was a lot of fun, but it was there that I experienced the whole Christian music industry. And to be honest, I was pretty disappointed. Because if you're going to get paid by a Christian label to go out and be a Christian band, the very least you can do is not be a jerk. Because I just found so many of these Christian pop stars and rock stars just be really, really arrogant. And I would find out years later that a lot of them were also drug addicts and alcoholics. And they had issues. In other words, they were human. But if you're in that Christian music industry, you're expected to be perfect. And I certainly knew that I wasn't perfect. But when I left that, I had kind of a bad taste in my mouth. And so I decided I was pretty much done with the Christian music industry, and I would just try and compete against the big boys in the world. And you know the story. I eventually started Galactic Cowboys and got in a band with a bunch of guys that were Christians. But we just started writing songs that made us happy. And we toured and we made albums for about 10 years. And that whole time I called myself a Christian and I went to church. And in 1997, when my ex-wife and I moved to Kansas City, we immediately found a church there. And I went through all the motions, but there was just always something lacking in me. And I just kind of felt like God hated me most of the time. Combined with the fact that I had been screwed over many times by Christian people I looked at as friends and that I trusted, and they would just stab me in the back. And in many cases, I felt very judged by these people. And in 2009, my marriage was kind of on the rocks at that point. I was completely depressed, and I was really questioning everything about my faith, about God, about Christianity. And right at that time, a friend of mine passed away, and I went to a church to his funeral. And it was the church I'd been going to for quite a while. And this guy I knew from the church walked up to me and said, "How's Monty?" And I said, "I'm all right." And he quickly said, "Well, that's not what I hear." And once again, it was that judgmental tone. And I turned and I walked out of there, and I vowed that very day I would never go back to church ever again. Not at that church, not at any church. I was done. And shortly after that, I got divorced, and I left her and my 10-year-old daughter at the time, and I got remarried to a girl that was way younger than me and not a Christian at all. And maybe it was partially a midlife crisis on my part. But all I know is that for the next 10 years, I lived as a non-Christian who tried my best not to believe in anything and gradually watched my life turn into a complete mess. And in 2020, during COVID, my second wife divorced me, and I felt rejected and worthless, and I had nowhere to go. And my only option at that point was to call these Christian friends of mine and see if I could stay with them. And they were two of the first people I had met when I'd moved to Kansas City 20 some odd years earlier, and I met them at a church. And when I called them, they said, "Yes, you can come stay with us." They had a basement that had a bed in it, and I took some of my clothes and art supplies and I moved in. And I lived with them for about 6 weeks, and they would feed me, and they would talk to me, and they would always encourage me to get back to God. But while I stayed there, and I don't even think they knew this, I got downright suicidal. I would wake up in the middle of the night and lay there in the dark, and I would just pray to God that he would just go ahead and kill me. And one day, it got so bad that I drove to a sporting goods store and looked at the guns. But it was during COVID, and so fortunately, they didn't have any bullets. Like, the shelves were empty. And so I said, okay, well, I guess that's not gonna work. And so I went back to my friend's house, and they suggested that I go to a church and get some Christian counseling. And I didn't really want to, but I went ahead and did it, and this guy would meet with me once a week. And he would talk about how God loved me. And I would say, I don't know what you're talking about. I've never felt God's love. I mean, I've prayed and, looked for answers. I even wrote a song years ago called Speak to Me. But I don't know what you're talking about when you say God loves me. But for weeks, the endless cycle of depression and hopelessness continued. And I would just keep thinking, I'm 60, I'm going nowhere, I have no one. I'm a loser and I've made a complete mess of my life. And I knew that all the bad decisions that I'd been making over the years had put me in this position. And I felt so much regret and so much shame. And you know how it is when somebody goes to rehab to stop doing the bad things they're doing to themselves? And whether it's drugs or alcohol or whatever, they try to replace it with something positive, something good. Well, during this terrible time, I would wake up every morning in the basement, and I would have a new song in my head that I would start writing in my brain, and it would just stay there almost all day, and I would eventually just sing it into my phone. Well, one morning I woke up, and the line, Love Rehab, came into my head. And I thought, yeah, that's kind of what I'm going through. I've been put here in this basement for a reason, and I think it's to cleanse myself, because I knew I was full of poison. And I need to replace the terrible person I've been with love. And at the time, I didn't know it was God's love that I needed, but I immediately got this melody that went with the words to Love Rehab. And it was painful to sing, but I knew it was going to be a good song eventually. And it took me a few years to finish writing it, but it ended up on the new album, and the chorus is exactly like I heard it in my head that day. Now the good news is that during this time of turmoil and pain that I was going through, I was suddenly bombarded with painting commissions. And I mean, some of these were big paintings. And people were asking for portraits of their dogs and couple paintings and rock star paintings. and paintings of their grandparents, and scenes from movies. And I know I may sound crazy, but I don't think that was any accident. I still feel like this was God's way of telling me that I had purpose and that He cared about me. And I set up an easel in the basement of my friend's house. And day by day, slowly, I began to feel like I had faith again. So much more to give. So 6 weeks after moving in with Greg and Paula Vanderstill, I had made enough money from commissions to get my own place. And I found a little one-room apartment there in Kansas City. And it was all I really needed, but at the time, it was just still really hard to sit there at night and go, "What am I doing here? How did I get here?" And not to sound overly spiritual or like I'm trying to preach, but that was where I just found myself asking God to forgive me for just becoming such a horrible person. And I also reached out to my daughter Zoe and her mom and just told them I was sorry. And even though all the damage had been done, it was all that I could do. Now keep in mind, this was still during COVID, and so I couldn't really go out and do much. And so I just stayed in my apartment most of the time and painted and worked on commissions. And once again, I had never gotten so many commissions in my life. And that's what I did on Christmas and New Year's. I just painted and spent those days alone. And during that time, it was the Christian people who were reaching out to me and encouraging me and telling me to stay on the path. Yeah, it was the Christians, the people who I had turned my back on, who were the kindest to me when I really, really needed it. And it started changing my view on everything. Now, fast forward to a few months later, I got a message from Alex. And it turned out she'd been through a lot of the same things I had. And we had this instant bond and connection, and I ended up moving to Colorado. And once again, that was no mistake. She gave me the love and acceptance that I needed, and I think I gave her the same. And she filled my life with happiness and helped me heal. And I gradually started to realize that everything I'd just been through was exactly what I needed. In fact, it was a blessing. And as you know, we moved back to Houston. We found a really cool church, and God continues to bless us. And so, to answer the question, are Galactic Cowboys a Christian band? Well, my answer would be everyone in the band is a believer. We're not perfect, and we've all had our issues at times in our lives, but we believe, even me.
Thank you for sharing your honest feelings with me.
All right, moving on to some odds and ends and random stuff. And I'll start with an email from Matt Caslow in New York. And I call Matt Mr. Magnet because he orders my refrigerator magnets just about every month. And he gives them to his friends. And I really appreciate that. But Matt recently started listening to my podcast. And he says he enjoys it very much. And he wondered if I'd ever discussed Sam Taylor on this show. And he says, the sense I get is that he went from Svengali to cult leader with the bands that he worked with. But I gotta say, those early albums by Galactic Cowboys and King's X are very well produced. I suspect he could be very controlling and demanding, but was very talented. Would love your take on this. Well, yeah, Matt, I've talked about Sam Taylor a few times on this show, and it's always a tricky subject because in the beginning, things were really great, and he helped us so much. He got us on an early tour before we were signed, and then he helped us get signed. And I trusted him completely, and I probably trusted him too much, and I was very naive, and all I wanted to do was get out there and play and be a rock star. And as time went on, I realized some of the deals we signed with him were not good deals, at least not for us. And I think a lot of the attention and the power he ended up having kind of went to his head. And it ended up feeling like we were just working for him, and everything just had to be the way he wanted it to be. And that's when things just really started breaking down. And I just felt like he was becoming too involved in even our personal lives. And I started to really resent it, and at that point I said, I think we need to part ways. But early on, it was great working with him. He had some great ideas, and I learned a lot about arrangement and things like that from him. And he really was very talented. Like, when we were in the studio, he'd sit down at a piano in there and just play his ass off. And there were other times when him and I would go to a baseball game and he was just a friend. And for a long time, I really looked up to him and admired him. But there came a time when it just seemed like he was more interested in promoting himself and his company than he was our band. And there was even this thought that, King's X and Galactic Cowboys, they're from Katy, Texas. And I told somebody the other day, no, none of us lived in Katy at that point. We all lived in Houston and had to drive about 30 minutes to get to his office because that's where he lived. But he started throwing out this thing of the Katy sound or the Sam Taylor sound. And it just really started rubbing me the wrong way. And to this day, I think the reason why you can't get through a review of Galactic Cowboys without hearing King's X was all because of Sam. He wanted everyone to think that he was the reason why we sounded the way we did, and it was the Sam Taylor Music Factory. And I never liked that, and I still don't, and that's why we ended up asking out of the deal with him, and we had to hire a lawyer and all that crap. But I'm not saying everything was bad because he did a lot of great stuff for us, and I will always be thankful for that. But after we recorded Space in Your Face with him, we did find a new management company, and it was Concrete Management that had Pantera and White Zombie. And for a while, they were great. They got us on the Dream Theater tour, and they also got us the role in Airheads. Which brings me to the next topic, which was the song we recorded for that movie. It was called Don't Hate Me Because I'm Beautiful. And I get asked all the time about that song. Like, where can I find it? Could you guys re-record it? And unfortunately, I'm sorry to tell you, but I don't know that that song will ever see the light of day. You hear just a few seconds of it in the movie. But the only person I know that has a copy of that song is our former drummer, Alan Doss. And one day years ago, he sent a picture of the cassette that he had with that song on it. And I said, oh man, could you make me a copy of that? And of course, my thinking was I'll get to play it on my podcast. But of course, he never did that. And based on my history of trying to motivate Alan to do anything, I'm guessing it's never going to happen. But here's kind of the story behind that. We were on tour opening for Dream Theater around 93, 94. And our manager, Andy Gould, came out to the show in LA. And afterwards, he said, hey, would you like to go out to a movie set? And we were like, yeah, that'd be a blast. And so we drive out there. And if you've seen Airheads, they were shooting that scene that was them at the end of the movie where they're playing outside. And we just kind of hung out, and Judd Nelson was there. We met him, and then Steve Buscemi came over and said hi. But we didn't really know who he was at the time because he wasn't the big star that he is now. But we just thought we were there to have a good time, and all of a sudden on the way back, our manager says, how'd you like to be in that movie? And we were like, are you kidding? That's incredible. And he said, okay, well, what you've got to do is you've got to write a song for the movie, and we'll fly you out about a week later, and you can shoot your scene. And the idea for our role is that we were this douchey kind of LA band, like these 80s metal rock stars. And so I thought, well, why don't we write a douchey metal anthem? Well, I remembered that there was this commercial on TV maybe a year or so earlier, and I think it was for shampoo or something like that, and it was this hot chick going, don't hate me because I'm beautiful. And when I saw it, I remember thinking, oh, well, there's plenty of reasons why I would hate you, sweetheart. And being beautiful is only one of them. And I remember waking up the next morning with the chorus in my head. And it went, don't hate me, cause I'm beautiful. And I showed it to the guys, and we just sat down in the tour bus and immediately just wrote the rest of the song in about 30 minutes. And then the movie studio flew us out to LA, and we went into the studio on a Thursday, I think late afternoon. And we recorded the whole song in one evening. And then the next day, I think we went to the studio lot and we recorded our scene, and we were there all night long. And then the next morning, we were still awake, and they sent a limo to pick us up. And I remember Brendan Fraser coming over to me and going, thanks for doing this, man. And I was like, are you kidding, man? This was amazing. Thank you. But then they took us to the airport. We flew to Minnesota, and then we played a show opening for Dream Theater that night. But it was all a great experience. And, you know, unfortunately, the song did not get on the soundtrack. And for some reason, Ben, Dane, or I still don't have a copy. And I don't really remember anything other than the chorus. But it was basically just us making fun of that 80s hair metal stuff. Like Cherry Pie or whatever. Which leads me to what's on TV. And here lately, I've just been watching a lot of YouTube stuff. And somebody, I don't know who, but they posted a bunch of old Headbangers Ball episodes. And oh my god, some of that stuff is so bad. I mean, the outfits and the posing and the trying to look sexy. Just so embarrassing. I mean, some of the vids actually still hold up, like if it's a thrash band like Testament, they still look pretty cool. But there was just so many bands back then that got signed because they sounded like somebody else that was popular. And they all made terrible videos that all looked the same. And they all thought they were going to be huge because MTV was going to play them for a week or so. But then they all went away. However, in hindsight, you know, we probably didn't realize how embarrassing a lot of that stuff was at the time. But looking at it now on YouTube, a lot of that needed to go away.
Oh!
Alright, before I go, I wanted to once again beg you to go to my website, MontyColvinArt.com. I've got all kinds of rock star and celebrity paintings and prints. And I've also got a section for Galactic Cowboys with all kinds of cool stuff. And if you'd like me to do a commission for you, please drop me a message. But in the meantime, Alex and I and the gang will be packaging up your CDs, vinyls, and t-shirts and sending those out to all the funders. And to everybody else, we'll be releasing that album as soon as we can. But my final thought of the day is, yes, Galactic Cowboys are a band of older guys who are still putting out music. But unlike a lot of these older bands who partied and abused their bodies and now they look incredibly haggard, we took pretty good care of ourselves. And now 35 to 40 years later, we're able to put out music that's as good or better than we did when we started. And you don't see or hear that much anymore. And when I see new videos from some of these bands from the 70s and 80s that I liked, I kind of feel sorry for them. However, I was on YouTube yesterday and I saw a video from Night Ranger that was new. And yeah, they look a little older, but you know, the song was great. I actually really liked it. So as we're going out, I'm gonna play you some of it. Here you go. It's new Night Ranger. All right, that's going to do it for me for now. I will be back soon with more fun and mayhem. But until then, this has been Monty saying take care. Don't let anyone tell you what to like, unless it's me. And
rock on!